You're listening to Jazz on the Rocks with Shelly G. Ear candy for the hip, only on 92.5 The X.
It's Shelly G from 92.5 The X, and I am here with Joshua Hislop from Abbotsford, BC. Josh has a new album out. It's an EP, and it's called Cold Wind. We're going to be hearing that a little later on as well. But first, hello, Josh. How are you?
Hi, I'm well. How are you?
Good. So what was it like for you when you first heard your songs on the radio?
It was strangely surreal. I kind of thought, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie That Thing You Do.
No.
Okay, well, there's a part where the band, like, it's a band and they're trying to get on the radio. And they get on the radio.
Yeah.
And they just all freak out. And there's this huge scene where they're all jumping around for joy and everything. And that's kind of what I expected it would be. And I'd be, like, ecstatic.
Freaking out.
But I was driving by myself.
Yeah.
And also, I was on CBC Radio 2. And Richard Fry was like, this next guy is a local kid and whatever. And he's like, Joshua Hislop. And I was like, hey, that's me. And then like it comes on and I'm like in my car by myself.
Did so you turn
like,
it up?
I turned it up real loud and rolled my windows down. But no one knows that it's me. So they're all just kind of like, all right. And I just drove around. I was like, I guess that's cool. Like,
you're one of those people who are, you know, sometimes when you drive and you see people talking and they're the only one in the car.
Definitely.
Yeah, that was you, right?
That was me. I was over the moon by myself.
Yeah. So are you happy with how your EP turned out?
Yeah, I'm amazed. Like, I am the first, like, I'm my harshest critic for sure.
Uh-huh.
And when I was recording the EP, it was like, I was at the time living in a hotel with 30 other young adults and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like a little art space kind of thing. And my now manager, Tyler, he was also living there. And he kind of told me, you know, we should do something. So it was kind of like the spur of the moment thing. We weren't thinking about big labels or anything like that. We were just like, hey, I have some songs. We should record them. And about halfway through, I actually left the whole recording process. I was like, I don't know if I want to do this. And I went traveling to like India and Southeast Asia and everything. And then 4.5 months later, I came back and Tyler was like, hey, can we finish this now? And I was like, yeah, sure. So we spent 2 or 3 more weeks on it. And then we had just a few quick shows. And at one of the shows, it happened that there were some people from Network. So
really?
Yeah.
So you're saying that this was all kind of happenstance?
Very much so.
You're
like,
kidding me.
No, very much. In no way have I ever, like, I've been playing the Abbotsford scene, the Fraser Valley, Chilliwack, you know, Langley, Vancouver a few times for the last probably 8 years or so, but never just kind of like I set it up and do coffee shop houses or gigs gigs or something like that. But Tyler was very, he was saying like, you know, I really believe in you and we should try for a year. We should try and really pursue music and see where it takes us. And I said, as long as the doors keep opening for the music, I'll go with it. And if it closes, I'll go back to school or just do something else that I love. And it just happened that it was like, I think it was the first or second show that we met the guys from Network and they were like, hey, we should have a meeting. I was like, oh.
Really?
Yeah.
Being an artist like you are was not your first choice. It was just something you did.
It's always been my passion, like since I was about 15. But it's something I would have done whether I was signed or not. I'd always be writing and I'd always be doing shows independently. I've been really blessed with the people I've met. We have a really amazing music scene in Abbotsford, a lot of really gifted people.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been able to kind of record for pretty cheap here and there, like house recording kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have just kept doing that forever. Like, that's just what I love to do. I would have probably pursued, you know, education a bit more. I dropped out of college to do music and that kind of stuff. There's other things I love to do as well, but this is just kind of a big part of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And it works that I get to do it now as a job, which is insane. It's really...
That is insane.
It's incredible, yeah.
Yeah, that's quite the story. You just sort of fell into this.
Very much, yeah.
I want to take you back a little bit. Can you recall your first musical experience? Or your first musical memory?
Yeah, I definitely can. There's a movie called The Sandlot.
Oh, I know that movie. Oh,
one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
I love that movie. In the movie, there's a scene where it's the 4th of July, and the kids, they always go and they play in their baseball diamond or whatever it is at night, and the field's lit up by the fireworks. And the song that's playing is America by Ray Charles.
Yeah.
And I just remember, like, I must have heard, you know, thousands of songs by that time in my life. But that song, there was just something about the way that he was singing those words and everything that I was just like, I want to do that. Like, he's just really got through to me. My mom has always been a big fan of, you know, Nat King Cole and Ray Charles and like some of the older kind of stuff like that. That's what I started listening to when I first started listening to music.
Really?
Yeah, it's some of my favorite stuff. Ray Charles is one of my favorite artists ever. Wow. Like, I got an allowance. I got like $3 a week or something like that. And I saved up for like 4 weeks. And I was like, can I buy one of his albums? And my mom was like, yeah, okay.
So. That was your first honest-to-goodness experience, a Ray Charles album.
Yeah.
You know what? You've got good taste. Did you sing when you were little?
All the time.
You did, eh?
Oh, yeah.
So it's
not well, but all the time.
Yeah.
My parents used to encourage me to not sing at the table and to use my indoor voice when singing. And they were, because I would like, I'd make up songs about, you know, just everything, whatever I was seeing, basically.
Yeah.
Which might sound cute, but when you're doing it every day, all the time, your parents, you know, it wears on their patience. And so, same with your teachers and your fellow classmates. So, yeah, I learned pretty quickly that it's acceptable when you're by yourself, more so.
You were one of those little kids in the back seat that kept singing the song that never ends.
Yeah, but you sound great. So you're just like, man, everyone else is enjoying this. I'm so good. In reality, your dad's just, the vein in his neck is going crazy and he's trying not to pull over and scream at you. Yeah.
Now, when I said I was going to take you back a ways, I came across a couple of videos of you that you did with CBC 2, and they were fabulous.
Thank like you.
But you know what really caught my eye? It was a comment that was left underneath one of those videos, and the comment was by a Mrs. Toes.
Ah, yes.
That was your grade 2 teacher.
Yes, indeed.
And she went on to say that she remembered you read Hop on Pop to the grade 2 class all by yourself.
Look at me, hey?
Yeah, look at you now. And she was so proud of you.
Yeah.
And now you're sharing your music.
Mm.
So what I thought I would do when I said I wanted to take you back is I'd like you to read a couple of pages of Hop on Pop.
Oh, my goodness.
We're going to take you back to grade 2.
Well, she'll be loving it if she's listening.
Yeah.
All right. Hop on Pop by Dr. Seuss. Up, pup. Pup is up. Cup, pup. Pup in cup. Pup, cup. Cup on pup. Mouse, house. Mouse on house. House, mouse. House on mouse. All tall. We all are tall. All small. We all are small. All ball, we all play ball. Ball, wall, up on a wall.
Very good.
Thank you.
She would be very proud of you.
I can't believe that.
Does that bring back memories? Do you remember how you performed in grade 2?
I was a very dramatic kid. So I was always kind of, you know, in the spotlight, kind of liking to be a center of attention. That's weird because, you know, now I'm very shy. I'm quite an introvert.
Hmm. Oh, isn't that interesting how that changed?
Yeah.
So you're a shy guy, yet your songs are very emotional. You know, they generate a lot of feeling and that sort of thing. And I would assume that they are your feelings.
Yes, for the most part. I mean, some of them are inspired by other people's relationships or stories, but most of them come from my heart and my own walk.
So you're just putting yourself out there.
Yeah, and that's, you know, usually before a show or something like that, when I know that, like, whenever I know that people have paid money to come and see me play, I am so nervous. Like, my body shakes and I usually throw up before a show. And I've been doing this since I was 16, and I still do throw up before shows. And like, I remember playing a show, and people came up to me and were like, you have the most incredible vibrato. And I was like, no. Like, my body is just shaking, so it sounds like I have this vibrato, but I'm just terrified. So.
Really?
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time.
At the same time, you can read Hop on Pop.
Like, no one else. But no, I really do love the feeling. Like, at the end of a show, when you've really poured your heart out and connected with some people there, and you can tell that, you know, you've connected, and people come up afterwards and talk to you about, you know, how it affected them, it makes it worth it each time, and it kind of makes me go like, okay, yeah, I can keep doing this.
Do you have any kind of ritual, anything that you do before you...
You mean besides throwing up?
Yeah, besides throwing up.
Right.
Like anything nice.
I do, if Fisherman's Friends. You know Fisherman's Friends?
Oh, yeah.
There's a flavor called apple cinnamon.
Ew.
Oh, no. It's delicious. It kind of, it sounds gross, I guess. But it tastes like kind of like apple pie.
Oh.
It's really nice. You should get some. I'm going to get some for you.
Okay.
And before a show, usually I'll have about 2 packs of those. And there's 22 in each. And it's like, don't have more than 6 on the side or something a day. But I'll have usually 2 packs before a show.
Friends. Really?
Yeah. I don't know what it is. There's something about the, it makes your throat feel nice and cool.
And that helps you.
Yeah.
Huh. No wonder you're throwing up.
Yeah. It's probably what it is.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about your EP, Cold Wind. One thing that really, really impressed me about this album was the instrumentation on it. It's very gentle, but it's not at all boring. And it has the violin and the cello. Do you play those instruments at all? Did you envision those songs with those instruments in mind?
Yeah, when I write a song, I start with the lyrics, and then and the melody, and then I structure the chords around that. So it's usually guitar and vocals for me first, but I do write all the string lines, the cello and the violin and everything. And sometimes it's really quick, and it just like on the song "Who Am I," the string lines just took me about half an hour to kind of just go like, well, that's what they should do. Like it just fits the song perfectly, whereas songs like Nowhere Left to Go or Cold Wind, those were more like, you know, take a couple hours to kind of sit back and think. Like when I was in Toronto and talking to John, the cellist that I played with it for CBC, he was saying, that he appreciated the cello because it's kind of featured in the songs.
Yeah.
And my thought is, like, cello is one of my favorite instruments. I don't play it at all. I just think it's a beautiful instrument. It's limitless in what it can do. And it's got such a beautiful voice that, like, in these songs, I want the other instruments that are featured to really be heard. I really wanted to make it a point of kind of featuring the cello and the violin as, like, kind of background vocals.
Yeah.
But they're instruments. They just really complement the songs, you know, and make it kind of that warm feel.
Yeah.
When I write a song, it's almost always has a violin and cello component.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You play the banjo.
I do,
on this album. And, you know, I've got to tell you that when I think of a banjo, I think of dueling banjos or Deliverance.
Yes.
You know? So,
everyone asked me to play that riff.
Yeah, well, there was no Deliverance on this EP.
No.
What do you love about the banjo?
I don't know. There's something about the sound that it makes. Like it's so different. That it's similar to a guitar in that it's fretted, and you know, it's played pretty much the same. I pick it the same way as I pick a guitar, but it's just a completely different sound. It's complete separation from the acoustic guitar, and I find that it's really if you use it like Deliverance, it's creepy, and if you use it in that kind of way, it's like you know, kind of redneck esque or whatever. But if you use it in a different way, if you think of outside the box and kind of think of again as a voice in the song, then it can really complement the main melody.
Yeah.
And so, whatever instrument, like whatever song I use, whatever instruments I use for the songs, I never want to start and be like, you know, we're using this, this, and this, and that's it. I kind of start and say, okay, I have the guitar and the melody. What does the song need? And then we'll add what it needs. So it could be piano, it could be cello, it could be banjo, it could be mandolin, it could be anything. But we'll build it as we go.
Yeah. Okay. What instruments do you play anyway?
I do play guitar, banjo, mandolin, piano. Well, I guess glockenspiel, but that barely counts. That's hitting a piece of metal with a mallet. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
Is that right? Do you ever think you might pick up the cello, something like that?
My wife actually bought one before we were married, and so we have it at the house. So I've always kind of thought, you know, I'd like to do it, but I'm kind of terrified. Like I was saying, you know, banjo has the frets, mandolin has frets, guitar has frets. It's kind of like an instrument like for dummy. Like it's really like put your finger in two and you're good to go, right? But if you play cello, it's all very need to know all that stuff. And I don't really know scales or anything like that. So it's intimidating. But I would really love, since I hear the lines anyways, I'd really love to be able to do it myself.
So you've not taken music lessons or?
No, I took piano lessons when I was, 9 or so for about a year, but I couldn't read music and my teacher was really frustrated with me. So it didn't end or it didn't end very well. It just kind of was like, yeah, you don't want to learn this way. So I don't want to teach you. Yeah, I've just kind of done it all by ear.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
What about singing? Your vocal lessons, things like that?
No, all by ear. Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
So you have a real natural ability.
I guess so.
Well, you should be picking up that cello, man.
It's like when I'm wasting time, I also really love the oboe, so maybe I should buy one of those.
Wow. You know, are you a jazz guy, like, underneath all this?
Yeah, I'm not a jazz maniac, but I do appreciate, my cat's name is Miles, after Miles Davis.
Really?
Like, yeah, I do appreciate some jazz.
Wow. You have 6 songs on your EP.
Yep.
Cold Wind, Little Sparrow, Nowhere Left to Go, Who am I? I love that one. Who am I? We have seen, and If I Was a Better Man. Hmm? Why did you choose those songs to showcase yourself?
Right. I don't even know if it was like if we were thinking what showcases me so much as what kind of fits. Like we when mm-hmm. Tyler and I kind of first met, we were thinking of songs to do. Mm-hmm. I had probably, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 18 songs or so mm-hmm. that we could have chosen for the EP. But I don't know what it's called. But I remember I read an interview with John Mayer, and I think he's an amazing artist. I don't necessarily like his music, but I think mm-hmm. as a guitarist, because he's brilliant. And he was talking about seeing music in colors. And I do that. So that's part of how I've learned those instruments by ear is that whatever you see. So like for Cold Wind, the album cover is those like that nice green with the trees and everything. Each song kind of on the album to me in a different way is a different shade of green or teal or like kind of a crisp white. But they mm-hmm. each have these really unique colors to them mm-hmm. and it makes up the painting, which is the album art on the cover. Wow. So that's kind of how, when we were like thinking of which song should fit, it was kind of like, well, what finishes the painting? What complements the painting? And these ones are the ones that I think best represent it.
You probably don't know of this guy. He's a little obscure, but his name is Lawrence Blatt. He's a guitarist mm-hmm. Out of California. He's also a scientist.
Oh, interesting.
And he put out an album called The Color of Sunshine. And what he did was take colors and sort of attached the frequency that would go along with that color. And then he would write a song in that.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant.
I'd love to check that out.
Yeah, you should. It's well worth your while. But he sees things like that too.
Like right now, I'm just doing a full length. I'm recording a full length album.
Oh, really?
And so it'll be 12 songs. Mm-hmm. Like this one for me, like whereas Cold One was kind of like the bluish, the greens, like that kind of earth tones. This is more of a reddish, purple kind of like, there's more passion. Like some of the songs are a bit louder. Some of the songs are a bit with more instrumentation and kind of like more depth, I think, even in the lyrics. Uh-huh. I'm really excited for it. Yeah, it'll be coming out this, I think, May.
Another thing that I was reading about is you're a traveler.
Yes.
And you went to India. You were saying you dropped your recording, like you're in the middle of recording this EP and you ran away.
Yep.
To India.
Yeah.
Why India?
Well, I've always wanted to go to India since I was about 5 years old.
Yeah.
Like I said before, I was a very dramatic kid. And we had a friend from India live with us when I was 5.
Yeah.
And he would tell me stories of what it was like there. His name was David, and I just remember thinking, like, this sounds like the most amazing place in the world. And he was like, promise me, one day when you can go, you'll go there. Uh-huh. And I was like, David, I promise. So, like, but because I was very dramatic, I really took it to heart.
Yeah.
And so I've probably, you know, romanticized that promise over the years and what India would look like and all those things. But I've always wanted to go. I was just kind of nervous with the recording and everything. I was like, you know, if I'm really pursuing this, then I'm really pursuing this. And there's things I want to do before I really pursue a career, such as go to India. So I went and I was in India alone for 6 weeks.
Wow.
And then my then girlfriend, now wife, and two other friends joined me for another month. And then we went to Southeast Asia as well.
Really? You also had said you almost died there.
Yes.
What happened? What was that all about?
I'll give you the very condensed version because it's a bit of a story.
Uh-huh.
But the first time I almost died in India was, two times. The first time was I was in the desert in Jaisalmer in late April, early May,
mm-hmm.
Which is the hottest time in India.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in the desert, so it's, you know, 48, 49 degrees. I went on a camel trek so it was me and a guy from Spain who was like 30-something. His name was Luis, and he didn't speak English.
Mm-hmm.
And they had arranged everything for us and said that they'd provide water. So we didn't bring our own water bottles, and we had to leave really early in the morning. And they drive you in a jeep way out to the middle of the desert, and then they just let us get out of the jeep. And about half an hour later, over the hill came these two people with camels. Mm-hmm. One was a middle-aged man, the other was like an 11-year-old boy. And we got on the camels, but we had no water, and we were walking. Eventually, like after a few minutes, the middle-aged guy was like, okay, see you later. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, this is your guide. And I was like, this 11-year-old boy is our guide. He's like, yeah, you'll be fine. So he just walked off, and we're like, oh, okay. So now it's me and Louise and some little 11-year-old boy who doesn't, none of these guys speak English. So I was like, man, what are we doing? Like, so we went all day through the desert and all through the heat with no water.
Water.
And normally in Jaisalmer, if I was just in the city, I would drink about 6 liters a day.
Yeah.
So with no water, we were quickly becoming dehydrated, and Louise was vomiting and getting quite sick. So we stopped for lunch and I was trying to communicate with the boy, like, what's the deal? What's going on? And after some, trying to figure out what each other's saying, it came out that there had been a deal made with our guest house that through whom we'd booked the camel trek, that they would take us into the desert and we'd left our backpacks at the guest house. So they take us into the desert basically until we collapse, and then they take whatever's on us, like our money or whatever we have, and the guest house keeps our bags and they leave us in the desert to die.
They were divvying you up even before you left.
Yeah. So knowing that, then Luis and I, the Spanish guy, we bribed this kid, because we know that he's maybe getting a commission for doing this, but he's not going to get straight cash. So we both offered him 400 rupees, which is about 10 Canadian dollars each, to take us to a road or something to get back, and he did. So we went back to some road, and a car eventually showed up, and we went back to the place and had some words with our guest house, and they ended up funding our trip for a little while, and but then I was sick and I had to get all the way in the west coast of India. And I had to get all the way to the east coast of Calcutta to pick up my girlfriend in 3 days. So I was going, and by the time I got to Varanasi, I wanted to see the Ganges and everything. And so I did. And when I was walking back to my guest house, I collapsed in the street of Varanasi. And I don't know if people really know that much about Varanasi, but it's very, very populated. Like, it's at least like a couple million people. It's packed in Varanasi, and it's very dangerous. So to pass out in the streets there with my money belt and my camera and all these things, I remember going to take a picture, and then I blacked out. And the next thing I remember when I opened my eyes was I was in a hotel room, which was not my hotel, and there was an Indian man sitting in the room with me, sitting on a chair, smiling at me. And I opened my eyes and looked at him, and he said in English, he said, my friend, you are very close to dying. And I was like, what? So he ended up explaining himself that he was a doctor, that someone had found me in the street. A man named Krishna had found me in the street and picked me up and carried me to this hotel and paid for a room and paid for the doctor to come see me and paid for all my medication and paid for the doctor to wait for his time, for him to wait for me to wake up so that he could explain all the pills I need to take. And
you're kidding.
And he said I had severe heat exhaustion, heat stroke, and was close to kicking it. So
you're kidding.
No, yeah. That was the first time I almost died. Oh, that was after about 3 weeks in India.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Makes recording quite a bit nicer, doesn't it?
I would go back though. I really loved
would
India.
You really?
I really would.
You know, I'm wondering, did you hear music there?
All the time.
To music?
Yeah. Well, I didn't have an iPod or anything.
Yeah.
But there's always something going on in India. So no matter where you are, it's never quiet. And there's always music, whether it's good or bad, but it's always blaringly loud. And so sometimes I would listen to, when I was in Dharamsala by the Himalayas, they would have the Om Mani Padme Om chant playing all day, every day, around the temples in like the foothills of the Himalayas. Yeah. You could go up and listen to it.
Yeah.
So I would do that often. Or if you're down in Calcutta, there's temples everywhere. There's just street musicians everywhere. Everyone's playing and there's noise all the time. Your senses are always under fire.
Is that right?
So, yeah.
How did that experience affect your music? Like when you came back and you picked up the recording and, you know, making your EP, did that have an effect on your music and how you delivered your music and that sort of thing?
Well, when I came back, I'd never been to a third world country before, so I think I had a bit of culture shock when I got back. So we finished the EP just kind of like with the original vision that we had. But having been home now for just over a year and been writing this whole time, some of the songs that I've written since being in India deal directly with what I was going through at the time. And those will be featured on the
album, the full length that's coming out. Does any of the instrumentation reflect, you know, that
I think we
vibe?
Put some harmonium, actually, on a couple of the tracks. I wanted to get a sitar when I was there. I'm not going to go through the whole Beatles thing and start going down. Yeah, I wanted to get one, but they're just so expensive. And a couple of my friends who have tried to bring them back from India have had them smashed. And so other than a harmonium, I don't think there's any Middle Eastern instruments, but yeah.
Wow, I'm looking forward to hearing that album. Where else would you like to travel?
Oh, I would love to go to Spain. Actually, a good friend of mine and I are planning to go to Spain soon and do the Run of the Bulls. Would really love to do that.
Well, I guess after being left in the desert to die.
Yeah, you know, who
running
cares?
Running of the Bulls.
It's not a big deal. So I want to go to Spain and do that. I also want to go to Japan. I've always wanted to go to Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been to Ireland and Scotland, and I lived in Scotland for a little while.
Yeah. So you're very well traveled.
Somewhat. I haven't been to South America at all. I haven't been to most of Europe. I've been to Russia. I've been, like, there's lots of places I'd love to go.
You know, if you're in Spain, maybe you'll pick up some flamenco guitars.
I learned on a classical, so I'd love to. I'd absolutely love to, yeah.
You know, Josh, I understand that you're a coffee hound.
How do you know that?
Listen, I do my research.
You do, because I really am, but yeah.
So do you speak Starbucks?
I try not to, actually. My wife worked there for several years, so we got free coffee when she worked there. I would prefer, though, to go to the smaller kind of mom and pop places. Like as much as I can. We don't really have that many of them in Abbotsford, but whenever I'm in Vancouver, I try to go to a smaller little spot.
What's
like that.
Your typical order?
Oh, man. Just a straight up Americano. Just no sugar, no cream.
Really?
Just,
ooh, hardcore.
Yeah, it's bad. And I'll have, like, if I'm recording or if I'm, you know, writing or something, I'll have 3 or 4 a day. So it's.
Is that right?
Pretty harsh, yeah.
Oh, that's amazing to me, you know, because you know what coffee does to you, right? It, you know, you're kind of jittery.
Gets you,
and
yeah,
all that. Yeah. I mean, when you listen to your album, it's so smooth and, you know, gentle. Yeah. And here you're. You know,
I'm tweaking out and
pouring back the Americanos. Now, this album, like all the songs are very gentle. Hmm. Are we going to hear something different from you?
Yes, I think it is. It's a side of me for sure. Mm-hmm. I think everyone has different sides. And, and this is one where, you know, I do try to be quite contemplative and everything. But I also find that if you're only ever contemplative and there's no action, then you become, you know, stagnant and you're trapped in your own mind. Mm-hmm. And the opposite is also true. If you're only reacting and you're never contemplating, you're just running around like a chicken with your head cut off. So, you know, you should, you know, there needs to be a balance. So this is kind of more of the contemplative side. And that's not to say that the next is like some crazy rock and roll album. I'm not that kind of artist. Yeah. But there are some faster paced songs. And there are some songs that, you know, are a bit louder and kind of there's more of another side of me that will be displayed, I think.
So what's playing in your car stereo?
Right now, almost religiously, is Bon Iver, his new self-titled album. I just can't get enough of it. I absolutely love it. I've always been a fan of his since way back, but it's just so good.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's really brilliant.
Over and over and over again?
Yep.
Yeah. You have this new album coming out in the new year. Mm-hmm. Anything else going on?
Yeah, we're looking at some live dates in the new year for, I think, you know, out east again. Until the album comes out. And once the album does come out, then I think that will be in May, and that'll be kind of quite extensive touring through through Canada and hopefully the States. Mm-hmm. While all that's happening, I'll be writing some more and you know, in and out of the studio and just kind of one foot in front of the other.
Just take it a day at a time.
Yep.
Is this whole thing a surprise to you?
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely right. And it's not as though, like, I mean, you know, it is hard work. It's not as if it's all just like, you know.
You bet it's walking. Hard work.
It's tough. I kind of always thought, you know, like before this, I was painting houses, interior and exterior, and thinking like, oh man, if only I could do what I love, this would be, it's so much easier. Yeah. And then you do, and it's like, wow.
It's
like,
really hard.
If you're not careful, it can really kill your passion because it is a job. It's not like you can just kind of be off. You have to kind of always be ready. So
do you have a good team behind you though?
I have an amazing team. Since I've, like, there's always been speculation about labels for good reason. I mean, sometimes they can, there's all those horror stories, but from day one, I just have had a really great feeling about the folks at Network. And, and since signing, it's just been like being a part of a family. Like it's been really, really great. Yeah.
So what do you want to tell people about you and your music?
I don't know. I think that people need to, like, if they're wanting to listen to my album, I think that they need to give it some time because it's not something that, I mean, it's easy to just kind of listen and be like, yeah, you know, it's nice or whatever. But each song, all the lyrics, took me a long time to write. Like, I don't just pop out a song real quick. Like, I really do think about the words I'm using. When I was writing before, when I was like 15 or 16, I just made things rhyme and that was enough. But now I really do have something I'd like to say in each song. I really want people to take time to listen to the lyrics and kind of allow, you know, it to grow on them. And then one of my favorite things is hearing what people think the songs mean. And that to me is always just like, because, you know, I don't like to always say what it means.
Right,
I like to just kind of, I know what it means, but whatever it meant for you, I'm not going to take that away. So it's really neat to have people come up and be like, I mean, I had a guy on my Facebook page, on my music page, tell me that Little Sparrow, he's an ex-Marine, and he has a tattoo of 3 sparrows on his arm, and Little Sparrow to him, it's about, and there, each sparrow tattooed on his arm is for, he was a medic, and it's for each of the soldiers that died while he was trying to care for them.
Wow.
And to him, Little Sparrow speaks straight to his heart, and it just means the world to him. And I'm not going to take that and be like, well, that's really nice, but that's not what the song's about.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, so I really just want people to take the songs and listen to them and interpret them as they will.
Mm-hmm. Make it theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Would you play something for us?
I'd love to.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that okay? If I do Cold Wind?
Everything that I've said, there are moments I regret. And in your time of hope and hollowness, well, don't give up yet. And everything that I've known, those nights spent on my own. But if I get this wrong and off you go, then I am alone. But when that cold wind comes, if all you do's under, you don't understand, I will wait for you. When I don't know what to do, when I'm searching for the truth, don't talk as much as we used to, and I miss you. But when that cold wind comes, if all you do's undone, oh, and I don't understand, wait for you. But when that cold wind comes, if all you do's undone, oh, and I don't understand, I will wait for you.
Beautiful. That was Cold Wind by Joshua Hislop from his EP called Cold Wind. And you will be coming out with the new album in the new year, later on in the new year. How can people get a hold of this EP?
This EP is available at HMV and on iTunes, so digitally or physically.
Joshua Hislop, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Everything that I've said, there are moments I regret.
This has been Jazz on the Rocks with Shelly G, only on 92.5 The X. Jazz on the Rocks music was produced and performed by Jason Rasso.